You can never know what another person is thinking. You think you know the people you live with, the people you work with, the people you love. But often, you only know what they reveal consciously or subconsciously. The theater is a place where we, as an audience, get the rare chance to crawl inside someone's skin, to get closer to understanding what they think and feel, how and why they act. I was reminded of this while watching Under the Mulberry Tree by playwright Timothy Jones and directed by Hannah Eidenau. It is a taut drama centered around people not knowing or understanding each other very well. Conversely, theater maker Harry Giles is very clear that he wants to blow up the palace of Holyrood House for art. And in his piece, which can be seen as part of Buzzcut in Glasgow this month, he will, or rather, he'll blow up a small model, and will frankly explain to you his motivations.
Hello, everybody.
It's the multicolored cultural laser. We travel the world for the boys and the girls. Casting pots of wonder and amazement. Multicolored cultural laser.
We'll begin with playwright Timothy Jones and director Hannah Eidenau, who I caught up with after a recent performance of Under the Mulberry Tree at the Festival Theatre.
Hannah Eidenau, director.
Timothy Jones, the playwright.
Under the Mulberry Tree is a story about a woman who desperately wants a baby, lives in a relationship where her husband won't give her what she needs, holidays in the south of France, and falls in love with a young man who she hopes might save her.
There's five characters, a homosexual relationship, and then affairs happening all over the place. One marriage that is up and down and things. It seems to me to be about the way that people don't really know each other. That in our relationships, it's very difficult to fully express and or show yourself or reveal yourself, and how terrifying and at the same time dangerous that can be. How hard is it to write and direct a play that is about the things that aren't being said?
It's really important for the actors to be able to invest in the emotional intricacies of each of their characters that they play, and that we're not one-dimensional people and there's an enormous amount going on, and they have to spend a lot of time working through the reasons for living and the reasons for why they say things. And the lightness of touch of the piece of text can create an enormous wealth of knowledge that bubbles away under the surface. In terms of writing a play, we discuss with the author what their true intentions are and what they're really trying to say, and then try and find a way of expressing that through the words that are on the page. It's quite challenging.
Well, in terms of the writing and layering the characters, what you're concerned with is just building a structure so that you know that eventually these characters are going to reveal these hidden secrets, and you just keep focusing on trying to get those in the right place all the time and not giving away too much too soon and making sure you put everything in the right place. So it's all about structure.
In terms of the writing, when you set out to start writing this, what is your process like?
Well, the process is very organic. I mean, I started to... my aim was to write about a woman who was in moral and spiritual chaos. And I was trying to write a modern version of Hedda Gabler, basically. So the starting point was where the play ended. And I suppose I've just worked back from that starting point.
That's a really interesting writing technique in general. Just start at the end. Don't start at the beginning. Start at the end.
The end has always been the end, but the beginning and the middle and has changed considerably over the process, because I don't think you can straightjacket things as easily as you might hope, and so you've got to be quite flexible and in where you go with the creation of the characters.
Hannah, can I just ask you, this is a different play. I haven't seen any of your other work, I should be clear about that, but having done some research, it seems like a very different play than maybe you've been known for in the past, where there's been the Lockerbie play, which is kind of a one-man documentary production, the show that's about euthanasia. How did you come to this piece?
All the plays that I direct are about the intricacies of the emotional world and people. Those are the things that are in common with this. This is about people and how they behave, negotiate life, how they get through their turmoil, how they express themselves. So actually, although the structure might be different, and it is set in a different time, and it is fictional, as opposed to verbatim, it is still about that very same thing, which is people's wants and needs and how to get your ultimate goal or to reduce yourself to the bare minimum of your emotional world.
It's a much different thing, though, to stage and to direct and to create this world than it is to, say, put one person on a stage. The format is much different, I get the sense, because I know you did the big weekend, which is a whole interactive kind of experience, whereas this is a much more audiences over there, cast is on the stage, and we're watching.
Well, I've directed Ibsen before. I've directed quite a few classic cool plays. So the process is never really that different. You set it where you need to set it. You get the right designer for the piece. You get the right lighting designer. You have your sense of timing, your sense of relationships and what you're trying to build. So actually, the processes aren't different, even though the material might be.
Tim Jones and Hannah Ida now, everybody. I was keen to speak with Harry Giles before his work is shown at this year's Buzzcut Festival, which features an exciting assemblage of cutting-edge live performance. Now, Harry has been working on and researching his piece, I Want to Blow Up the Palace of Holyrood House, for art, and the process itself is fascinating.
My name is Harry Giles. I'm a poet and performer, and I'm doing a piece at the moment called I Want to Blow Up the Palace of Holyrood House, brackets, for art, close brackets.
It's going to be happening at the Buzzcut Festival in Glasgow from the 23rd to the 27th, which is a great festival. And Harry, you're going to be doing something. You're going to be doing this piece on the 27th. Now, can you tell us a little bit about the genesis of this project and what exactly it is? You're not literally going to be blowing up anything.
It's probably quite important to be clear that I am not actually blowing up the Palace of Holyrood House, and that I would never condone such violent and terrible action. So it's a piece about rage and violence and explosions. I live at the bottom of Easter Road. I live in Leith, and that means that I cycle past this palace every time I'm going to work or going into town, and I don't really like the monarchy, and I don't really like sort of enormous bits of private property in the centre of cities, and I would quite like to see some form of social revolution. So a lot of my rage and my anger and my feelings of upset and frustration at the world have become directed at the Palace of Holyrood House. So I started to daydream about what it would be like to blow it up. But then I realised that I wasn't really up to actually blowing it up, so I decided to build a model of it and blow that up as a kind of impotent expression of futile rage and hope.
So when did this idea occur to you? Just from walking past cycling past the palace? I wonder what it would be like if that bit fell off. If I put a thing there. Is it like as logical as that, where you're looking at it as somebody who would genuinely try to do this? Is that what the project's about? Like how you would actually go about doing this and the reasons for it?
Well, it's sort of about that, but by stealth. It came from the realization that I wasn't actually going to blow it up, and I didn't think I could, and perhaps that I didn't think I should. Even though every time I walked past it, I would kind of experience visions of this palace blowing up, I realized I wasn't going to do it. And I realized that when I have these feelings, I tend to express them through art. I have a lot of beliefs about the power of political art and the power of art activism, but half the time I think that's kind of bullshit. And I realized that I was starting to think about doing an art project about actually blowing up a palace, and that was a really pathetic thing to do. So I thought, well, why don't I fully explore what it would be, what it would mean to kind of put my explosives where my mouth is and try and blow up a model palace. So I'm going to try and blow up a model palace in as realistic and frightening a way as possible while remaining completely legal and completely safe, because I don't actually want to go to jail for the sake of a pretty explosion.
In terms of art, I mean, there's a great quote on your website.
Oh, yeah. So Derek Jensen is like a deep ecologist and an anarcho-primitivist. And he says, every morning I wake up and I have to decide whether or not I'm going to write a book or blow up a dam. And so far, I've decided to write a book, and I'm still not sure that's the right answer.
That's great. Yeah, it sounds like exactly where you are at the moment. So you've been doing loads of research, and that's a pretty major component part of this thing. But also, from looking at your website and the research you've already done, there is a, I don't think, misplaced paranoia that you are being watched. And so you're very consciously saying, look, I'm looking at these websites. These people have followed me on social media and have retweeted this thing, right? You're being very, very precise about the research you're undertaking. Is that real, or is that a piss take, or is that part of the, I don't know, I guess a satire on the paranoid world we live in at the moment?
Definitely all of those things at once. Every time I do a research session, I do all of the research in public, and then I produce an auto surveillance report about what research I've undertaken in order to build a model palace and then blow it up. And the reason for that is that outside of all of this kind of theoretical and aesthetic stuff about rage and activism and art and what possible use any of it could be, there is actually a serious issue in the project, which is counterterrorism legislation in the UK and the effect that that's having on freedom of speech. Because there's a set of laws in the Terrorism Act that I find really, really frightening. They make it illegal to look for and store any information that could be used to commit a terrorist act. So they make particular kinds of information and particular kinds of research illegal, and somebody has already been arrested for that. They make the promotion of terrorist acts illegal. And in the most bizarre one, it's also illegal to carelessly speak in a way that might encourage other people to commit terrorist acts. So you actually have to be careful that you're not accidentally encouraging people to commit terrorist acts. I find those laws terrifying, and it means that when I was thinking about how to talk about this desire to blow things up that I have, and that a lot of activists express all the time, like we talk kind of flippantly about blowing things up, I'm just going to blow it up, is that that's actually taking place in a really awkward legal position, because I'm not allowed to say that I think we should blow things up. So I'm going to say officially, for the record, I don't think that we should blow things up. And I'm not allowed to talk about blowing things up in a careless way that might make other people want to blow things up. So I'm going to tell you right now, don't blow things up. And I'm also not allowed to research explosives unless I can prove that it's not for terrorism, which is why I have this awkward little 4R in brackets at the end of the name of the show, because my get out clause for researching the explosives is that it's for an art project, it's not for terrorism, it's for an art project. And that's me trying to kind of push up against the limits of the law as a way of saying these laws are here and they're frightening.
And there's a really interesting point you make in terms of like explosives and what constitutes an illegal explosive, because there are legal explosives that are all over the place. That's relatively defined. It's a kind of an abstract thing where something that goes from being a legal thing like a firework to an illegal thing like a bomb. But there's basically a bit of science or like a very concrete point where it becomes an illegal explosive as opposed to a legal explosive. And then, but what it doesn't have, what the law doesn't seem to have, is any kind of demarcation for where free speech becomes an illegal speech and becomes incitement. And because those are very, very murky and muddy territories, which you could then just be arbitrarily put into prison for, say, promoting your show at Buzzcut.
The whole thing with the auto surveillance report is sort of sticking two fingers up at the law and almost daring them to do something about it, because I don't think they could, because if they did, everyone could see what a ridiculous situation it was. So it's not really risky, but I am trying to taunt them a little bit. So I'm trying to find a way to legally make a good explosive that would legally and safely blow up this model palace. So I started researching the licensing around explosives, and it turns out there's a whole category of chemicals that you don't have to have a license to have as long as they have enough water in them, as long as they're suspended in enough water, because that makes them safe. And the amount of water they need to have is defined by this really, really neat percentage. So you can have a tray of chemicals soaked in water, and if you were to gradually dry it with a hairdryer, at a certain point they would suddenly become illegal, and that point is perfectly mathematically defined. And I find that really, really interesting, because I'm doing a bunch of speech that I'm trying to keep on the side of legal, but I don't have a mathematical principle for keeping it on the side of legal. I just have to make it not be terroristy enough. If it's too terroristy, then it becomes illegal. If it sounds too much like a terrorist, it becomes illegal. But there's no definition of what like a terrorist is. It's just somebody's judgment or some argument that gets to be made in court. We've only, as far as I know, had one, it may be two legal cases using this legislation so far. So there isn't even a body of legal evidence or of legal argument about it yet to really know. They've only gone for the very extreme cases so far. So I'm trying to push up against that.
Do you know if it's different in the United States at all? Because we've got at least that bit of the Constitution that would say freedom of speech, and then you can get there. But it seems like it's just an ill-defined thing. It's like pornography, where I know it when I see it, is basically the answer to what is pornography. What is a terrorist speech? Yeah, I'll know it when I see it. But that doesn't seem quite right, and it can land people like yourself in hot water. Or just normal people who want to do some research or say things or angrily be like, I want to blow that up, which is a point I think that you empathize with. And you can understand why people want to blow things up. Not necessarily condoning the act of violence, but you can empathize with the notion that the world's a very, very frustrating place.
I don't know the specifics of the law in America. I don't think that the constitutional right to freedom of speech is really protecting Americans at all. I know that there is a similar erosion of pure freedom of speech taking place in America along similar lines, but I don't know what the specifics are. If people feel a bit scared about this whole language of blowing things up, which is reasonable because it can be quite an intimidating language, especially if you're from a country with a more recent history of actual explosions than the UK. Another good way of thinking about it all, which I was just starting to research thanks to somebody on Twitter, is opium. You can technically produce opium from ordinary garden poppies, and it's perfectly legal to grow garden poppies. But there's a bit of legislation where if you have the knowledge to turn those poppies into opium, then growing the poppies becomes illegal. So the act of possessing the knowledge makes just gardening illegal. And I'm looking at exactly the same kind of area of stuff, just with the slightly more worrying and scary territory of blowing things up. But if that worries you, just think about poppies, just think about gardening, and it's the same stuff.
That's really weird. That's so crazy that you could just be your average guy who happens to know how opium is made because you're smart and you know things. You decide to plant some poppies and boom, you're now on the wrong side of the law. It's such an arbitrary thing. How will this be, this performance be enacted? Do you know yet? Because I know you're really deep in the research stage, but at some point you need to take all of this information, all of this research, and of course, your model of Hollywood Palace and blow it up. So do you know how that's going to happen in front of a live audience? Do you know what that's going to look like yet?
So the whole project has three phases, and I'm in the first one right now, which is the research phase, where sort of for around 4 hours at a time, I'm sitting in public with my computer screen projected and lots of documentation happening, researching explosives in order to find a safe and legal way of blowing up a model of the Palace of Holyrood House, etc., etc. So that's the first phase, and that's what I'm in at the moment. The second thing will be actually building the model and actually exploding it. And that's probably going to take place in either a field in the countryside, or if I can find a good brownfield site, like a construction site that I can just use for a little bit. And there will be like a 5-foot by 5-foot model palace behind some Perspex screens and a big ring of audience around it. And then there'll be an explosion, which might be quite unsatisfying. I think it'd be quite good if after all of this, it was a fairly pathetic explosion. And we'll film that. And that's the sort of second phase. At the moment, I've narrowed it down to a flower bomb, which you can look up on YouTube if you want, a lithium bomb, which I don't think will have enough power. I need to write to the police and see if it would actually be illegal to use a Molotov cocktail in theatrical circumstances. I think that might be pushing it too far. And if none of those can work, then I might just have to use an airbag, which is technically an explosive. So I have some methods, but I need what I'm going to be doing at Buzzcut is working out which of those methods are worth testing and trying to work and trying to understand the legal parameters of it. I'm just going to reiterate that while you can look up all of these things on YouTube, you should never use them to commit a terrorist act.
I so badly want you to record the conversation you have with the police about this. Do you have any inkling that anybody's been watching you? I mean, obviously, this is probably going to put you on some kind of list. No? I mean, it seems like a really bold and risky thing to do. Are you worrying about that at all?
I'm a tiny bit worried. I am actually being really, really cautious. My mum wanted to know whether or not I'm going to post a little evacuation order through the doors of the model palace before I blow it up. Which I think I will, because I definitely, definitely don't agree with blowing up people. Or palaces, of course. I wouldn't ever blow up real palaces.
You know, has your computer browser slowed down considerably? Do you hear an odd click on the telephone? Has anybody contacted you to say, hey, we've noted that you're doing this?
Nobody's contacted me for this project. I have absolutely no doubt that emails and web pages have got flagged up on some MI5 web crawler. I have no doubt. And I have no doubt that some poor spy or civil servant is looking at my website and thinking, what a tool. What an absolute tool. I have no doubt that that's happening, and I'm not particularly worried about it. I already know that there is a police file on me. I've done a lot of activist things, nothing particularly out there, the kind of things that lots of people have done. I've been involved in a lot of activist movements like Climate Camp and Occupies and all of that. And I know I've been photographed by foreign intelligence teams, and I know that there is a police record at protests that I've been at and not had my details taken at. So I know that they have surveyed specifically me at protests. And I know that because when I went to apply for a personal license to sell alcohol, when you apply to be able to sell alcohol, you have to go for an interview with the police. They actually questioned me about protests that I'd been at when I had had no interactions with the police. So I already know that there's a file on me somewhere. I shouldn't think it's a particularly serious file because I'm not really that hardcore an activist, but I already know there's a file on me, and I suspect that this stuff is getting put in a file so that if I ever become a really dangerous person, they can bring it up. But I'm not worried about it. There are files on everybody who does any kind of protest activity.
This will be on your permanent record, Harry Jones.
Yeah, it will be.
Speaking of protests, one thing that I've always admired that you've done, which maybe it's hearsay because it was told to me by somebody else, but in St. Andrews, you were one of the people who helped make it so that people could hang out on the beach, right? Is that true? Is that actually true?
Yeah, that's actually true. So St. Andrews is a university town. People love having bonfires on the beach because it's a beach and there's sea and it's cold and you want to have bonfires. And one year we were having a massive bonfire on the beach. It was a big annual thing, and the police came and they shut it down. And we were really annoyed about this. So me and my housemate decided to sort this shit out. And he did all the legal research, which is something he's really fantastically good at, and discovered that the police didn't have the jurisdiction to shut down beach bonfires. It was a bunch of stuff to do with tide lines and land that belongs to the Queen and local bylaws, and that the police had no legal right to shut down beach bonfires. So he found that out and did his research really, really well. And then I helped to coordinate a little Facebook campaign and a little letter writing campaign and a little bit of turning up at the police station and annoying them with these questions. And it didn't take that much before they were forced to say that they couldn't shut down beach bonfires, and they apologized to it. And after that, we had some nice stories of them actually facilitating people having a bonfire on the beach. So we were very pleased about that in the end. It didn't take that much work, but we were quite smug.
I think you have a right to be. I think that's one of the nicest things I've... Every time I'm on that beach, I just think of you guys. Harry Giles, everyone. You can see him at Buzzcut on the 27th of April, and the festival runs from the 23rd to the 27th. You can find out more about Harry's work, performances, and research on harrygiles.org. We're going to close the podcast today with a little jaunt from Jellyman's Daughter. The song is called The One You're Leaving, and you can hear more of their music and find videos and tour dates on their site, thejellymansdaughter.com.
Skin. How was I to know that I'd grown old? It seems a simple smile goes down nicely for a while, but I guess it's out of my control.
I don't know how you'd be safe at all. Yeah.
always had in mind. Go fall on your face. Had I known that you'd outgrown me, I'd have known my place. I don't know how you'd be safe at all. Yeah.